I was getting really worried. And so right away I said, Gurudeva, I'm not sure I can do both of these things. You know, even when you gave me the India Ukanishum, I thought that was a lot. It's here it is, we're heading toward the end of July. We're going to leave in December, because you want it this year. And that's not many months to do everything. And we don't even have one person who's wanting to go. Thank you. They said, you're looking at this all wrong. You can see that wasn't the first time he told me that. You're looking at this all wrong. So help me. He said, when you're working in the hermitage now for the next week or so, what you have to do is realize that everything you do to help with that is empowering the inner search work. See, right now you're looking at them as two separate projects that I gave you. I gave you this, then I gave you this, and they're colliding in your brain. I said, you have to find a way in your brain, your smart kid, find a way in your brain that they are a one thing instead of two things. And then when you're working in the hermitage, you'll be working mentally, psychically, pushing the inner search towards success. And if you're looking at it as this is in the way of inner search, then it's going to be in the way of inner search. That's guaranteed. And you're going to get frustrated. But if you look at it that this is actually helping that, then you'll do both successfully. So you try that. So I tried that. I had to. It sort of gave me no choice. And it worked beautifully. And everything came together for the inner search. And all the plans and everything. We got on a plane after a big farewell party in San Francisco, and we flew off to L.A. We had a plane, Air France plane from L.A. to Paris. Flew off to L.A. and but I only had 64 people, so I was feeling a little bit. I'm almost there, right? Pretty close, and then. One of the shishyas, his name was Mike Eisen, a tall, wonderful boy who lived in L.A., had come to say farewell to everyone at the party. And then he was on the plane to go home, and he sat next to me. That was his big mistake. Sat next to me. And I said, Mike, what are you doing this this winter? Well, I've got this job and I've got that. I said, we're going to India, and you really should go to India. I can't go to India. I've got so many things to do. I said, if Gurudeva hasn't been back to, I went on and on and on. Long story short. He got off the plane, went home, packed his bags, and we flew off without him, but an hour later, he flew on another flight to Paris, and we had 65 people. Yay. So that's an example of Gurudeva's strong push. He pushed the monks hard, in the early years especially. Later on, he got all mellow and loving, and you're all the beneficiaries of that. But he did worry aloud that the next generation might not be as strong as the first generation that he'd given all of these strong challenges to. And he worried about that. And he created another concept in later years and made some strong statements about it, about a balanced life. He realized, I think, that the strains of the kind of effort that we were doing in the early years weren't very sustainable. You know, you can do that for a while, but you'll eventually get tired and worn and fatigued from the effort. And so he tried to create a balance in our life that was through the whole life. And that balance, I want to suggest that you all have and find a balance in your life and work at a balance in your life such that, as I said at the beginning, you can go out of balance for a while and get crazy and sleepless and, you know, have a big push on something that's important to be done. As long as you come back to the center and back to the balance and back to the ease of life, so that everything in life works together and works for a long time together. So balanced life is also a life of the centenarians of the world, those who live over 100 years. They tend to have kind of balanced lives. They say they're happy. They're very accepting people. Attitudes like that can give you a long, long life. So a balanced life in Gurudeva's mind, he established it inside the monastery. You know, you really should exercise at least a half hour a day. Well, in the early years, that was unthinkable. We didn't have time to exercise half hour a day. All kinds of things happening. But now, not only is it thinkable, it's required by monastic law. You're going to monastic decree, you're going to exercise a half hour a day, and then each monk finds the exercise that works for him. So some monks love to go down into that beautiful river pond and swim for a half hour. Some monks like to do real exercises like weightlifting kinds of things and skip roping and treadmill stuff like that. And Bodhinath is a wonderful example. He's probably our best example for exercise. He walks vigorously 90 minutes a day, every day, without fail. 90 minutes. He has a whole way that it's sort of like a walking meditation. He has this course that he follows. I think it's about 1,300 feet this way and 1,300 feet this way, and he makes the trip again and again and again. And on each excursion, he thinks about a different thing that he's set out for himself. So while his body is moving, he's given himself a mental task also. It's quite a system he's got going. You should ask him. It would be fun. I'd like to hear the answer to that. Yeah, that'd be fun. So exercise is part of the balance, and then every day, of course, we meditate. It's not optional. Not optional. For those who don't know, if a monk doesn't show up for the morning meditation, then basically he doesn't get to do any seva that day for his kulam. So not only does he suffer, his whole kulam suffers, which is the hardest part, you know, if he didn't. So what's the result? Everyone shows up every day. Every day, no question about it. We're there. You know, like 1 hour, put your legs together and go within. And then balanced life in our eating. We have a wonderful diet, but we never snack between meals. There's never a cracker or a piece of cheese or what else are a good snack? Potato chip. Oh, I reminded you. Now, we don't have any in between snacking. You eat, then let the body do its work. You don't just keep trying to put more work into your stomach all day long. Oh, I'm feeling a little antsy. I think I'll eat something. Feeling a little tired, all pro, that'll eat something. No, we don't do any of that. A balanced life, very disciplined life. So, have you all heard of Arianna Huffington? Arianna Huffington, how many of us know her? Okay, that's pretty good. So Arianna Huffington is the creator, CEO, leader of the Huffington Post, which is a news aggregation service and very popular. And I think she started that in the year 2005. And she really worked hard. She's a type A kind of person, an overachiever, and everything she did in her whole life, she did better than anybody else in the room, that kind of a girl, sort of like a lot of the people I'm seeing out here in this room. So she was like that, and she started the Huffington Post, and she was hadn't done media work before, so she was learning, and she was struggling to create this empire, basically. And she worked and worked and worked and worked, and then she worked some more, and then she worked some more. And then in the year 2007, she was in her office, and she collapsed. And she fell, and she hit her head on a coffee table in her office. Big gash, went unconscious, and she woke up in a pool of her own blood. And that whole experience just stopped her, as you could imagine it would for anybody, and just halted all of these activities that were going on in her brain. And she asked herself, is this what success is? Wake up in a pool of your own blood? So they took her, obviously, to the hospital, and they gave her all of the MRIs and the CTRs and the URLs and whatever they gave. And they couldn't find anything that was clinically wrong with her. And so they concluded that basically she had just worn herself out and fallen from fatigue. So she basically took a vow to herself that let's you and me, Arianna, find another definition of success. You know, she's a success beast. She wants success. But she didn't want that kind of success. That suddenly wasn't the definition of success. And so she began a whole process of redefining her life. And she realized that success up until that moment was based on what she calls two metrics. Metric is a measurement. So basically on two metrics, that the world is after money and power. And that she had spent her whole adult life after money and power. And she later described in an interview that this was like having a stool that only had two legs. And so it wasn't very stable. You need a third leg to stabilize a stool. And she needed a third metric to stabilize her life. So she created a third metric, a third way of measuring success. And this third metric was, she termed it thriving. That was the word. So you can go after money, it's okay. You can go after power, no problem. But you should also thrive in other ways. And thriving to her, she kept evolving the definition of this third metric, and I think it's still evolving. even now. But she thought that thriving had a lot to do with sleep. She decided that sleep deprivation was not success. It was painful and it wasn't helping her, ultimately. So she made a decision, and she always gets 7 or 8 hours sleep of every night. She never allows the demands of her office, her business, to deprive her of her sleep. And in fact, she's gone so far, she's put nap pods in the Huffington Post offices all around the world. And then she requires, by law, that her staff take little naps when they're tired. They have to go to this little quiet pod and lay down. They get paid for this. That was one important discovery that she made, sleep. Let's not let the body suffer from sleep deprivation. And relationships was another part of her metric. And exercise was another part of her metric. And so family and fun. Fun was another part. She said, you know, basically we should have some fun once in a while in life. I asked one of the inner searchers, what do you do for fun? And the answer was, what's that? This was, it's not uncommon that you have a life that really doesn't have a fun increment to it. You know, it's so busy and so full and lots is happening, and you know, fun doesn't necessarily have a place in that world, but it should have a place in our third metric world. We should always have a place for fun. You know, do something that is spontaneous. Do something that you just enjoy, that has no purpose in life except that you enjoy it. And in proper measure, in proper amount, fun is an important part of life, right? So that's the story of Arianna Huffington, and I want to read some words from Gurudeva. This is Living with Shiva, talking about a balanced life. Building up the spiritual vibration in the home requires a control of computers. Here at our Saivite Hindu monastery in Hawaii, all of the monastics have a computer. And when they take vows, they are given their robes, their beads, their staff of tapas, and their Macintosh. And this enables them to serve the very best that we can from our little island. At the monastery, we look at our technology as our tools. And we control these tools. They do not control us. We use these tools to enhance our religious work, to amplify the Sanatana Dharma, and bring it out into the Western world and throughout the world through our written publications and on the internet. But we don't let those tools dominate our life. We turn them off at certain times of the day, and we turn them on at certain times of the day. At 12 noon, they are all turned off and not turned on again until 3 p.m. We have kind of a big switch. Bomb. Internet's gone. Can you imagine? And then 3 o'clock, bomb, internet's on. So during that time, you're allowed and expected to be offline a bit. And then we turn the switch at 7 p.m. again, so that you don't take that internet consciousness and then on and on and on endlessly into the night, you know, part of the control. On retreat days, which are 2 days each week, we don't use the computers at all, except possibly for an hour on rare occasions, and only for the most important things. So what does this do? It allows everyone to talk with everyone else, to communicate, to share, to appreciate each other, to work together for the good of all. It allows us to live a balanced life a human life in which the spirit within us can shine through and we have time to enjoy the sunset on our spiritual sanctuary on the garden island, to listen to the song of an evening bird, to meditate, to enjoy the company of one another, to take a walk in the garden. And all of this can happen even in the technological age. So we're getting close to the end of our time together, and I have something I would like us all to do. Don't be scared. Well, be a little scared. What I'd like you all to do, we'll start over here, and you're going to be first, even though you're not an official inner searcher. This is your payment for the class, okay? So what I'd like you all to do is stand, just say no, one at a time. Stand one at a time, say your name, and say something about the last 4 days, whatever comes to your heart. Wait, I'm going to have you pass around the mic. Oh, here comes the mic. Another mic.
I'm Shivaratnamanik, and thank you for the opportunity, Swami. It has all been very wonderful for the past 4 days, meeting you all and listening to the satsang of Swami and Sadhguru Bodhinatha. I think I'm very lucky to be here, despite not being an inner searcher. I must have been doing good karma to be here. So I hope I learn from what all of you, and I'm really glad to be here. Thank you.
Om. Let's do this. No, everyone in the room is going to deserve a nice applause. So no applause until the very end. We'll applaud everybody. Okay?
I'm Janani. The last 4 days have gone by very fast. So I think that's the first thing. They are magical, and the energy, there's a huge amount of energy. I'm a little pujaed out. I have I'm very honest. I mean, I'm very brutal that way. I'm pujaed out. I've had huge amounts of dashin. I hope I'm storing them somewhere. What can I say? And yes, it's very beautiful, very light, very away from normal life for the moment. So I have to thinking about what will be taken back and how it will filter through. I think I'll stop there.
Hi, everyone. My name is Jillian, but you can call me Jill. The past 4 days of spiritual boot camp have been intense, like anything.
No truth telling in the room. Did I mention that?
I've really enjoyed the experience. It's been really profound spiritually. Like with these pujas, the only other time I've ever felt as spiritually charged was in like Chidambaram in India. So it sent chills down my spine to be at some of these pujas, and it was an awesome experience. And I came on this looking for clarity and finding a path through life. And yeah, I'm slowly seeing that path now, and it's coming to the fore. So thank you.
I'm Padmaja. Last 4 days has been felt like 10 days to me. It really didn't go very fast. It's been completely incredible, amazing time that I'm having. And I wish it would continue. but I know someday I'll have to go back to the real world. And I've thoroughly enjoyed pujas, especially the Shiva puja that day. It was just completely very magical for me. And yesterday's Homa too. Having monks around us and the fellow devotees is always very uplifting time. So I'm very glad that we're here, all of us, and stop here.
My name is Pooja. The last 4 days have been, I think, a much needed difference from my normal routine, and it's been really great to be just kind of taken out of that and placed here. I think especially over the last 4 days, the thing that has really struck out to me is all of the Mauritian families here and how loving they are, and just being really inspired by their devotion has been so special to me.
I'm Sandy Devi, and the last 4 days have been very different from my life right now. I haven't really done anything spiritual for the past 8 months, so it's really nice, different, and yep.
I'm Shivaya, I'm Bhavani. Wow, so many things. I guess to be specific, I've been very moved by the music programs, especially the one 2 nights ago, and also the Nachintanai program. So deep and so stirring my soul. And when the Shivacharyas were chanting before that beautiful Panchaganapati yesterday, and they started that very rhythmic chanting.
Tuck, 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 tuck.
Yes, Ganesha was just dancing. I was very struck by that. I could really feel that. And also getting to know the members here, I just feel as if I've known them for a very long time. It was so easy to meet them and be with them. And I guess Gurudeva used to say, hands across the ocean. Really has felt like that. Thank you.
I am Urmila Rao. I come from Manchester, and I enjoy every day of puja and Gurudev's darshan. I never have experience like that in my life, and it is a lifetime experience I have got. Namaste, good home, namaste.
My name is Beth, and I've had a wonderful time here. I feel blessed beyond all measure, and I feel this is what they mean by being in the sea of experience. Om Namah Shivaya.
My name is Shakuntala. These 4 days have been very different for me. I have found those peaceful moments inside me, not the whole day through, but that, like for a short period of time. And my mind has been kind of blank, not thinking about anything other than the pujas, the homas, and the darshans of the guru and all the religious talks, spiritual exchanges that we have been having. And I'm very happy about that.